Please be advised that the Street Poets podcast episode you are about to hear illuminates one man's healing journey from wounds associated with childhood sexual abuse, gang violence, and incarceration, and is intended for mature audiences.
Still stuck on the grind. I got love for the haters who done lost their mind. I got love for the earth, the waters of rebirth. I got love for the fire in my heart when it hurts. I got love for my people, the poet in the streets. I got love for the brother in the cup making beats. I got love for the dancer, the dreamer, the son. I got love for the killer who gives up his gun.
Welcome to the Street Poets Podcast. For 25 years, Street Poets has been building community one rhyme at a time. We share our stories because they connect us to each other and remind us that we're all in this life together. Each episode, we'll bring one of those stories to you. We hope, as you listen, you'll hear some reflections of your own story, of the American story, of the greater human story. I'm your host, Art Kiros, and this is Gifts and Wounds with George Nunez.
I don't remember crossing the border from Mexico to the U.S. when I was 2 years old. But I do remember when I was 8 years old, my friend and I found a needle that my dad used for heroin in my treehouse. I remember pretending to shoot up through my sweater. When the needle pricked my arm accidentally, we both got scared. My friend never came over again. I also remember the first time I got jumped by three boys and wishing I had an older brother to defend me. I joined a street gang just weeks after my 12th birthday. I remember the feeling of belonging and security the gang gave me, how I trusted them with my life. If the homies told me to do something, I didn't hesitate because I believed they would never do anything to harm me. So when they took me to the house of a lawyer who lived in the neighborhood, a white man, who happened to be a pedophile and who later molested me, I accepted it at first because they said all the homies do it. But part of me knew it was wrong. I became troubled inside. The rage grew so fast. I wasn't exactly innocent before, but now I was out of control. I remember getting high, stealing cars, holding a gun in my hand for the first time. I became suicidal and stared death in the face many times. I wasn't scared to die because inside I was already dead. I was an empty shell, running around enemy territory, hoping a bullet would end my pain and put me to rest. I went at that big funeral with all my homies there and my best homies carrying my casket. I imagined that people would cry and that finally I would feel the love I wanted so badly. I kept bouncing from the streets to juvenile hall and back. While I was locked up, I would hear other guys talk about how they had sex with their girlfriends, and I would tell similar stories. But in the back of my mind, I knew that my only sexual experience was with this old man who molested me. I felt so much shame. I imagined that on Judgment Day, when I stood in front of God, he would ask me why I was with this old man, and all the people standing in line would gasp when they heard. I felt so small and embarrassed. After I was released, my mom moved our family to another area far away from my gang, but trouble seemed to follow me. There were more stolen cars, more petty crimes, and now, finally, girls. One in particular who was only a few months pregnant with my son when I went back in for a year. By this time, I stopped claiming my old gang for obvious reasons. But when I got to juvenile detention camp, I was assigned a bed next to one of my former homeboys. I kept it cool with him because I wanted to get out early, but I considered him my worst enemy. One day, he invited me to the Street Poets Writing Workshop. I was like, poetry? That's the lamest shit I've ever heard. His ego was tested, and he said, nah, man, I just go to pass the time. So I went. I never imagined that someone from the same group of people that took my life away would one day hand it back to me in the form of a pencil and a composition notebook. Over the next year, I used that pencil and paper to shine light on the darkest corners of my past. With poetry by my side, all of my childhood wounds became doorways through which I could step to become whole again. All of my childhood wounds, that is, except one. Maybe it was because of my lack of legal status or my lack of maturity to provide for a family in a responsible way at that time. But one day, I decided to rob a restaurant with my friend, a friend who happened to be another one of the victims of that same sick lawyer. Our wild revenge plan was to use some of the stolen cash to put gas in the car so that we can drive all the way across town to the child molester's house to kill him. At least then, I figured, my life would have some meaning. But instead, the police pulled us over just as we were leaving the scene of the robbery. At age 19, I was sentenced to 4 years in state prison. When I got to prison, my rejection of the gang turned out to be a bigger deal than it was in juvenile hall. Anyone who refused to fall in line with their gang would be targeted or risk being disciplined themselves. But when one of my former homies confronted me, I refused to comply. And when he asked, I told him why. You remember the lawyer? He looked down and mumbled, "Yeah, everyone in my hood knew that man. That's why," I said. It was the first time I'd ever spoken my reason for leaving my gang out loud. When our cell doors opened, he gave me a beating, but I survived. I could tell his heart wasn't in it. The truth saved me that day, but I knew it wouldn't save me forever. It wasn't long before I found myself on a tier with five other members of my old gang. I knew when they sent us out onto the yard, I'd be killed. So in desperation, I sent a note to the prison psychiatrist saying that I was suicidal and hearing voices. 15 minutes before rec time, guards showed up at my cell to take me away for an evaluation. When I got to the psych ward, they put me in a room with the psychiatrist, and I started doing my best One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest act to make her think I was crazy. But then I realized I've never actually met a real psychiatrist before, and maybe I could use a little free therapy. So I told her the truth, that I'd be killed if she sent me back onto the yard, that she had the power to save my life. Thankfully, I was reassigned to another facility for inmates into protective custody, gang dropouts mostly, as well as others who would be targeting the general population. Soon, my poetry helped connect me to the Arts and Corrections program there. I was proud to be named the Poet Laureate of the prison before time was up. I also used my writing skills to pen letters to the California Bar Association and the police department, the city where my abuser was still practicing law, and from what I've heard, still molesting kids. I explained what he had done to me and dozens of other boys who'd been offered up as payment for shady legal services he provided for older members of our gang. When a detective came to interview me in prison, he told me that the lawyer had been under investigation, even before they received my letter, that he doubted he would ever make it to trial. Months later, I was informed that my abuser had been found dead of an apparent suicide. I felt a sense of relief knowing that he'd never victimized any more kids. A year later, I was deported directly from prison to Mexico with nothing but my elementary Spanish speaking skills and $14 in my pocket. But once again, street poets stepped in to help. They connected me to an orphanage down here where I was able to get food and roof over my head for 6 months in exchange for volunteer labor. Now, 17 years later, I made a life for myself here in Mexico. I have an associate's degree in mechatronics engineering and two smart, beautiful daughters to go with my now grown son and daughter back in the States. Today, in addition to local work, I'm blessed to be able to serve as a remote teaching artist for Street Poet Team, the organization that first introduced me to the life-saving practice of poetry. I share my poems and my story through these virtual windows in the hope that it will inspire and help prevent kids from going through what I went through. They will make it easier for boys who've been sexually abused to speak up, to shine the light of truth into their own shadows and into the darkest shadows of our culture, so that we can all experience what it feels like to be free. Our prisons and the world are full of men who first began acting out, not because they've been sexually abused, but because of the shame and fear they felt and still feel for having been victimized in that way. If we can rid our culture of that judgment and shame, we will see the glue that holds gangs together dissolve, and our prisons begin to empty. Even here in Mexico, that remains my American dream.
Wow, George. That's one hell of a story. How did you even begin to tell it at first?
It's been years. I don't remember when I wrote it. I actually don't even remember the moment that I wrote it. I don't remember the moment that I know that I wrote it. I think I blacked myself out. What I remember was just like sending it out and not looking at it again for many years. It was the first time I actually accepted the fact that I was molested as a kid. Now that I spoke about it and that I'm sharing my story with you guys, man, it's been a couple of weeks, about a month since I started working on it, and it woke up a lot of stuff that was buried for all these years, and it's very hard for me even now. It's very hard for me even now to talk about it. It's a process that I'm going through. These emotions and these feelings that woke up are things that I haven't felt for like 25 years, and I've never really sat down with these emotions. I've never really sat down with these feelings until now. It's got me feeling like on the edge of life. And I mean, I'm not suicidal or nothing, but my emotions are crazy right now. And sometimes I mean, over the years, I picked up a lot of discipline, and I know I won't make like bad choices, but those bad choices are like right there, right in front of me. Like sometimes I just want to go out and, you know, like fight. I want someone to pick a fight with me. I want someone to kind of like challenge me. And I want to prove to myself that I'm not that kid. that I'm not that kid who let me down. You know, like I want to show me like that's not who I am. I'm good, man. You can keep going.
Man, I can hear that you're going through a lot lately as you figure out how to share this story. Are there any details you left out that you want to share now?
There's a part where it says that I wrote to the police department. Like, I didn't write to the police department. I wrote to the Bar Association. And it was easier to just include the police department in the story. But the reality was that I had filed a lawsuit against the lawyer in the same courts where he worked. And someone handed the lawsuit to the police department, and they contacted me, and they went to find me at the prison where I was at. And that's how I got a hold of them. And that's how I learned that he had like other cases pending and stuff like that, or investigation pending.
So tell me, George, what role has poetry played in your healing process over the years?
Poetry has really been like my therapy for the last 25 years or so. The way I look at poetry is like talking to a therapist, you know, like, and I think it's even better because you're not really sitting in front of someone who you don't know, or in front of a person, you know, that's not you. And I've learned to be as vulnerable as I can when I write poetry. I try to go to like the parts that hurt the most. I try to make myself cry. I try to make myself hurt. I try to bleed, because I know that poetry is gonna heal me. I know poetry is gonna help me let it out. And sometimes, I mean, I've written stuff that I've that I don't remember writing, and I just ball it up and throw it in the trash. It's so painful, I can't even look at it again. And poetry has really saved my life, man. Poetry has made me who I am today. And it's allowed, and I'm not even trying to put myself like up there on a pedestal. I'm fucked up, man. I'm broken. I'm a wreck, and I feel good about who I am today. You know, like it's like, and it's thanks to poetry, and therapy. You know, but the poetic therapy that poetry gives to people that actually has made me, you know, who I am, you know, and I'm good and I'm proud, and I know I'm still broken and I know I'm still healing, but I know with time this is going to pass and I'll be good and I'll move on to whatever else needs healing, you know?
Where do you think your resilience comes from?
I don't know. I think it's a mixture of different things. I think my ego is in there, a big part of my ego is like motherfucker, you ain't gonna give up, you know, like, and then, but you know, it's not easy, man. Like I'm a very resilient person, but man, believe me, there's shit that I don't want to get up from. There's stuff that I don't want to face. There's reality that I just don't want to look at. And I don't know where it comes from. I grew up with my three brothers and two sisters and a single mom, a mom who never gave up on us, who never abandoned us, who never gave up on life. You know, we've, and I don't know if I get it from her. I have a dad that also, well, that was an addict, a heroin addict, that was, you know, a gang member that was in prison, in and out of jail. And I'm pretty sure I picked up some good stuff from him too, you know, but I really can't pinpoint where the resilience comes from. I don't know where it comes from. I just know that it's in my bones and that I hope it never runs out because I always want to keep going. I've actually spoken to my daughter, Zoe, a couple of weeks ago, and I told her there's some things going on over here where I live and it's kind of dangerous, and I told her I just need you to know that I don't ever give up, and if I was ever to die without me being able to say goodbye to you, just know that I fought as hard as I could and my body was the one who couldn't make it, but my spirit and my soul and everything that I am fought to the very end. And, you know, that's just the kind of person that I am, you know. I don't know where it comes from.
If you could go back in time, what would you say to your 12-year-old self? What do you think he needed to hear?
If I can go back to the age of 12 and hear something that I needed to hear, it would probably be like, I love you. It would probably be, I love you. I remember I spoke with my dad once and he was like, what do you want? Like, he was like, cause I didn't hate him, but I had a lot of resentment towards him because he was never there. He was always high, you know, when he was there, he was in prison and shit. And I had a lot of resentment. I had a lot of resentment against him. So one day he like asked me to do something and I was like, no, you know? So he took me outside and he was like, hey, you know, like, what's wrong with you? And I was like, what do you mean what's wrong with me? And he was like, what do you want? And I was like, what are you talking about? He said, you want me to be your homeboy or do you want me to be your dad? And that kid in me was screaming so hard inside that I needed a dad. But I knew, like, he wasn't going to get off drugs. I knew he was probably going to go back to prison. I knew I couldn't rely on him as a father, as a dad. But what I really needed back then was a dad. And now that I'm a father, I mean, I tell my daughters I love them like every time I remember. And I speak with my daughter who's 11 and I tell her, like, I know I probably bug the shit out of you when I tell you that I love you, but I just want you to know that I love you. And I'm just going to keep saying it forever, you know, like it's whenever I remember, I'm going to remind you that I love you. And I just do that like as often as possible as I can. And it might be like very, very frustrating for her. She hasn't shown any frustration yet, but I'm pretty sure she's like, oh, damn, like I know you love me. Stop telling me you love me. But I needed to hear that, you know, and I don't want that to be something she needed to hear.
Given the lack of a stable father in your life, it's amazing to me what a good father you've become.
I don't think I'm the greatest father. I think, like, I mess with my daughter and I tell her, like, man, you're lucky, man. You got a badass dad, you know, like, and I mess with her like whenever I can, you know, like I tell her, like, man, like you got a great dad, Zoe. But the truth is, man, this person that I am, and I'm not perfect, has come out of really huge mistakes, man, like of not being a good dad, you know, like I have a son who is 24, 25, and I have a daughter who is 22 who live in the U.S. And I miss them so much, man, but they have so much resentment because they feel abandoned, you know, and they have the right to feel abandoned. But when my son was 2 years old, I mean, I was showing him how to stab. We were shooting guns together. Like, you know, I wasn't a really good dad, you know, at all. I would take him with my homeboys. We would hang out. I would, you know, I was 16 years old, you know, like, and I think what's allowed me to be a better dad is just the maturity that I picked up throughout the years and accepting the fact that I can't really go back in time to change anything with my son and my daughter though that are grown now. And that I have this huge opportunity to be a good dad to the daughters that I have now. And that's actually what kind of motivates me to be a good dad. The fact that I got this chance to do it right or do it the best I can this time around.
What does being a street poet mean to you?
If we like really dig down to like what it means to be a street poet, it means you're off the streets, you're this gangster, you're this tough guy or you're this tough girl, and you've been through shit and you're brave and you're courageous and you value yourself. And you have to bring that same toughness and everything that you got off the streets to be courageous when you write and you're vulnerable and you share your poetry. And I think that's what it means to be a street poet.
At Street Poets, we talk a lot about the relationship between our gifts and our wounds, and how our gifts can help connect us to a deeper sense of purpose in life. What, if any, sense of purpose do you feel in your life right now?
You know, whatever I do has to have, like, some writing involved in it. And it kind of, like, not just one time. I circled back a few times to writing again and again and again. So it's like, you know, I don't know if it's my purpose, but I think that it has to include writing, whatever it is, you know, even if it's poetry or if it's any other kind of writing, I have to kind of be included. And another thing that I circle back to is being of service. I stopped being of service for so many years. Like, I looked out for myself, for my family. I thought it was like the correct thing to do to kind of like move up the ladder economically and socially, and I just, that was what I was striving for, and I stopped serving people, and I've even humiliated people that I've come across that I probably would have never done before in other times of my life, and it's, this whole experience has really humbled me and helped me realize that I have to be more of service, you know, and I don't know if that is actually going to be part of what I do in life, the rest of my life. But I know that whatever I do, I have to like serve and obviously be humble and have writing in it.
George, most of our listeners probably don't know that you were one of the 6 original founding members of the first Street Poets group of formerly incarcerated youth that debuted at the Los Angeles Theater Center in 1998. Do you remember any of your poems from that first show?
Yeah, I can do it. I think I remember. Stepping out my body like a snake sheds its skin. Walking out the door thinking of all the crimes I did. Running up the streets, shooting bullets at a kid. Putting vatos to rest, passing test after test. But as I reminisce on all this negativity, I make up my mind to leave it behind. Retiring my past, beginning as new. And now I stand here staring at you, hoping I get through the stereotyping heads that think we're all the same. Praying to God that my poetry leads me out this crazy game so I can help my kids down the right path that I fell off when I was raised. But you can always find your way back home.
Thank you, brother, for your poetry, for your courage, and for your life. You are an inspiration, for real.
Hey, man, thanks. Thank you guys, Street Poets, Art, for having me here. It was great sharing my story. It wasn't easy, but I'm grateful for the opportunity, and, you know, I'm really humbled by the whole experience. Thank you, guys.
We still stuck on the grind. I got love for the haters who done lost their mind. I got love for the earth, the waters of rebirth. I got love for the fire in my heart when it hurts. I got love for my people, the poet in the streets. I got love for the sister in the cut making beats. I got love for the rhymers, the rappers, the one. I got love for the mamas who rise with the sun.